One of the biggest things, if you're struggling with something, is feeling isolated or lonely can just multiply that feeling so much more.
When we think about strength and being the strong one, sometimes I feel like sometimes we wear that like a badge of honour. I'm strong, I can get through this, like, I'm okay. And it's not, oh my gosh, nobody help me.
Yeah.
You know, to go through life thinking like everything's okay and you're fine and like, you know, you can get through things, and then things happen, what felt like all at once.
People can't support you through what they don't know. Absolutely. So if you don't tell anyone anything, then you don't have anyone to lean on, and you can't feel like, oh, no one supported me, because no one knew what it was you were going through.
Welcome to the Magnify Conversations. I'm Rachel and I'm one of the hosts today. If you're new, welcome. We hope that this content will be really helpful and beneficial to you. If you're a regular, it's great to have you back. And one way you can help us to get this out and to benefit more women is by subscribing to this channel. We would love you to do that. And today it's my privilege to introduce Sinead, who will be my co-host.
Hi, I'm Sinead Mink. I'm so excited to be co-hosting with Rachel on The Conversations, and we're looking to have open discussions about faith, life, work, career and relationships, and how our faith really works in the midst of all of those things. So I'm so excited to be a part of this today.
Yeah, let's get into this conversation.
Well, we're so excited to have this conversation today about the pressure of keeping up appearances. And we're joined by some amazing guests. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves and tell us what you do?
Yeah, sure. My name's Diane. I am the founder of an online beauty platform called The Afro Beauty Company.
Oh. And my name's Adra. I'm a fashion content creator.
Amazing. Well, we're looking forward to getting into the conversation. But as always, we have some icebreakers to begin with. So these are Desert Island, right? And we can join in as well, Sinead, right? So I know it's like I've got to sit and think about what this is now. One skincare product and why, one book and why, and one song and why. These are brutal.
This is really hard. Skincare product.
Yeah, skincare product. Well, I'll go first. Yeah. Mine would be, I mean, I don't know if I'm actually allowed. Am I allowed to say the actual product? No, maybe I won't name the product. But I would take, there's an amazing retinoid that I use and I am obsessed with it.
Wow.
So I would want to be maintaining my skincare. Yeah. Desert Island. That would be mine.
Yeah.
I think I would take an SPF. Because if I'm on a desert island,
that's a great.
Then, I think it would be an SPF.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing, but a good moisturiser with a good SPF.
Your
skin has to be moisturised.
I'm not good with skincare. I was trying to figure out how to bring hair stuff once again, like bring my wigs, but I will leave the wig.
Is it the girls again?
It's the girls. I was going to bring all the wig girls, but I think definitely book. I will bring my Bible, I can't lie. I really would bring my Bible. Yeah. I'll pray on it, I'll shake it, split the sea, Lord, something. Yeah, so yeah, I'll bring the Bible,
But what skincare products are you bringing?
I'm not very good anyway, so.
Something though. Come on, Sinead, give us something.
It will definitely be oil.
Yes.
Because I'm a dry person.
Yeah, like a base oil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so just some oil. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Something. Okay. Yeah, and you can cook with it too.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Resourceful.
How about a book?
I think it would be the Bible as well for me.
We're all in agreement on that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it technically counts within the rules. I would maybe bring a journal.
Yeah.
Oh my
so
God,
I could write things down.
Yeah, that's true.
If we're allowed that kind of a book. It's the game. We're allowed that kind of a book. And then one song.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. This is so hard.
I actually listen to the same song. I'm one of those people that I listen to the same song for like the whole week. I'm not a whole new album. I listen to the same song over and over again. So I think... Okay, this song that people don't even know, but it's called I Live For You, and it's by this like worship group called Insignia, and it's got me through so much. So even when I'm on the island, I'll be singing it like, I live for you. So yeah, I would bring that song with me, definitely. Yeah.
Ladies, any thoughts?
It's too hard to pick one.
Yeah. You can pick an album.
I think if I had to pick one, I think I would pick that song that was big during lockdown, The Blessing.
Oh yeah.
Because I just love that song, and that ended up being the song that was playing like when my son was born as well.
Oh,
so I feel like that would be the one song that I would pick, sort of bring back memories and stuff as well.
I mean, I can't think of a song. If I was to think of an album, I think it would be William McDowell, because he is just.
Yeah.
And there's a range of everything. There's a bit of like praise and worship, there's some like worship music. There's praise, there's worship. And like he does like little mixes of things as well. Yeah. So he's got like Caribbean, a bit African.
The thing is, you need variety.
Yeah. What album would you bring?
This is a hard choice. It depends what mood I'm in the day, but when I'm speaking right now, it's going to be B-Day, Beyoncé's album.
That's a serious album.
Debatable. Maybe her favourite album of mine. It's got a bit of everything.
It does have a bit of everything. That's what I think you need, some like variation, you know?
Yeah, so we're so glad to be talking about like keeping up appearances, and we're really going to dig into as well like being what it's like just feeling like you've got to be the strong one. But I guess first of all, it'd be great to just hear why it's important to you both that we're having this conversation.
So I think this conversation is really important because sometimes you feel so isolated and you feel like you're alone. And you feel like you're the only person that's kind of going through the things that you're going through. But actually, shared conversation and having the kind of conversations like this allow you to know you're not the only one. And there's so much power in that, you know, because that can take people also from being in an isolated situation to feeling, okay, cool, like this is how they got through it, or what have you. So
It's so important for that reason.
Absolutely.
How about you, Adra?
Yeah, same. I think one of the biggest things, if you're struggling with something, is feeling isolated or lonely can just multiply that feeling so much more. So I think just feeling like there are other people who've gone through it, who are on the other side, who are able to talk back on things that they've gone through, really helps or has encouraged me in times when I've been finding things difficult as well.
I think there's a lot of healing in conversations. And I think as women as well, we heal a lot from talking things through. And for both of you, you've had stories where you've had to heal, you know. Can you share with us some of those times where healing and talking about things has been beneficial for you both?
So I'll say for me, from like 2020, just before lockdown, prior to that, I honestly thought, I don't think I could ever be sad. Depression really a thing? And then, you know, so much stuff started happening. Like, my sister got really unwell. And if anybody knows my family, we are, like, the same person. We're all super, super close. So when she became ill, that was, like, a really big thing. Praise God, she's fine now. But and then I lost my dad a few months later. And then I lost my best friend. And honestly, it was just kind of like a downward spiral. And I was just like, you know, to go through life thinking like everything's okay and you're fine and like, you know, you can get through things, and then things happen, what felt like all at once, kind of was really, it kind of, I guess, showed me how you can be strong and how you can be weak in the same space, you know?
Would you have defined yourself as quite strong? Because, you know, you're saying like, I didn't think I could be sad. You naturally, because you were quite happy, quite positive, you would have described yourself as like, yeah, you were strong. There's not really times where you feel weak.
Absolutely, I would have. I think the environment I've grown up in, like, I've been around strong women. I've got three sisters. They are all super strong. They're like the strongest women I know, as well as my mum and aunties. And, you know, I've grown up in quite a strong environment. So I think it's innate in me to be strong. But when you go through things for the first time, I think that tests your strength. You know?
So in terms of even what strong means to you, what, like, if we break down, dissect that word, because it's kind of a blanket word, isn't it, that we use, oh, my mom is so strong, or like, I don't know, for you, either of you, that, what does that word mean, or what has the situations that you've been through, now what does strength mean to you, really?
I think before I went through difficult times of my own, I thought being strong was being able to just push through anything. So anything that you face, you're able to just push through. And I think now I've learned that there's strength in taking time out to heal, there's strength in taking time to process what you're going through, to really allow yourself to feel what you're going through. Because I think before that, I felt strength was everything had to be water off a duck's back. Like, you had to just be like ready to just get up and go no matter what happens. But definitely now, I think strength and resilience is really about being able to take that time to acknowledge how you truly feel about something and then to push through it.
Has there been anything in the last few years for you, Adra, where you've had to be like, you felt like you've had to be strong, but maybe there's been times where you've not been able to?
I think for me, the biggest challenge that came my way a few years ago was back in 2019, I got pregnant for the first time. And my husband and I, we'd been married for about 6 years before that. Not trying to have a family, just loving life. Yeah. And we were like, okay, it's finally time to start having these kids. And thankfully, I got pregnant like quite quickly. And, you know, our family's really happy. We were really happy, all of that sort of thing. And then when we went for the 12-week scan, I found out that there wasn't a heartbeat and that I'd had a missed miscarriage, which, in case anyone doesn't know, because I truthfully didn't know what one was at the time, it's if you have a miscarriage and it's almost like your body doesn't know that you're no longer pregnant. So I didn't have any symptoms or any bleeding or anything like that. So obviously it was a huge shock to us, like such a shock. And I think that was definitely the time where my faith was rocked the most and was just the hardest time for me, because it just came out of, it felt as though it came out of nowhere, similar to what you said about up until then, I felt like people always say, oh, the first few years of marriage, first 5 years of marriage are the hardest. I was like, well, this is great. Yeah. Like, it really, I didn't see kind of what everyone was talking about. And then that was the first time where I think for both of us was a big shock, a challenge, and a time that was low for us that we had to kind of really push through.
Yeah.
And were people around you like telling you, you know, show a brave face? Or what was kind of, what was the message you were telling yourself that I have to now be strong, or I have to now be, what kind of messages were you hearing?
I actually feel like that was the first time in my life, probably, that I didn't put myself under a lot of pressure to be strong. Okay. And I think it was just a point where I didn't feel capable of doing that. I think everything that I'd faced up until then, I could just put on a brave face and that sort of thing. But even, I remember talking to my sister about it, like, not so long ago, and she was like, that was the first time I ever really saw you, like, truly upset about something or truly break down about something. She was like, up until then, anything that happened, you were always the one who's like, it's fine, like, that's just who you are. And I think that was the first time that I just didn't feel like I could put that brave face on anymore.
What about you, Diane? Can you relate to, you know, what Adria was saying about this is the first time? Because up until then, as you described, things were just kind of breezing along. So is this a time where you felt I can unglue, or actually I have to even show strength even more?
Yeah, it's funny because I think it was a bit of both. I think because a lot of the not issues, but the situations weren't directly at me, other than my dad passing and my best friend, it was a bit of both. I felt like I had to be strong, but there were times when I was scared or I was worried or I was sad. I think, as I said before, there's so much power in community, and I'm so blessed to have amazing family and friends. And I always say, like, I could not want for anything based off of my family alone. And it's honestly such a blessing and a privilege. And I always say, friends are the family you choose. And again, I've got a beautiful network of friendships that like really help me in times of need. But it took me to be vulnerable and open up and share and accept the help, which is a bit unfamiliar to me, you know? So it was a bit of a balance trying to be strong, be vulnerable. Like, you're learning all these kind of new things about yourself, you know, in the midst of challenges, basically.
I feel like, you know, you're just saying that, then you're learning to be vulnerable. You're kind of learning being okay with being, I don't know if weak's kind of the wrong word, but just being a bit softened when that's not your norm. And I know maybe, I don't know, maybe you've got something to say about this as well, Sinead. I feel softened. Like I have. Is it's hard if you've been used to being the helper or the strong one in your like relationships or just in your life. Like Adria, you saying like your sister said she'd never really seen you so sad about something until like those few years ago. It's quite a strong statement. But I think sometimes we adopt that role of like, we don't tell people we're the strong one, but you kind of just, I don't know if the word is more resilient, or you're just ready to go again, water off a duck's back. And I'm not saying any of that is good. I think it can be quite,
I think it puts up a wall between when it comes to this time where you're trying to communicate something. I think for me, I'm an extrovert, so everything is, when people come around me, I'm energetic, I'm outgoing all the time, and there's a time where I don't want to be that person anymore. And when I've been facing challenges, you know, in the last few years, where some of my friends will literally say to me, I can't picture it for you. And I'm like, I just said this happened, and then I can't see it. And I'm thinking, wow, like, I have to really change. It's not even on them. I have to really change how I come across, because clearly, you know, when I'm asking for help, it's like I'm also not demonstrating that I need the help. And so it's really made me look inward as to what am I giving off that shows I don't need help. It might be messages that this independent woman thing that has taken over all our lives, it seems. It might be that, you know, I have a lot of conversations privately with God. I think being in leadership, I've learned to keep some things, a lot of things private. Yes. I always say my hair is full of secrets because I know so many secrets about people, but then my own secrets are just like pushed down, like pushed underneath. So it's been a lot of really trying to pull out of myself, why do you not share, or why do you want to look perfect all the time? I think it takes a lot of asking yourself questions, and I'm just wondering what questions do these times, what questions do you ask yourself, Rachel, you know, that provoke, why am I like this, or why am I always perceived as strong, or, you know. So
I think a few years ago, it's funny, one of my friends highlighted it to me in a really kind way. And it wasn't that she was like, oh, you always come across as, but she was trying to, I feel like she could see that I was struggling, but she was trying to like break in a little bit and get me to be vulnerable. And I just thought, I'm really open. Like, I'm really vulnerable and I'm not, like, I'm open with you. And she, it was a few years ago, she almost was saying, I can tell that you're not okay, but you're almost like, she was almost like, let me in. And it can't, I didn't just let her in straight away, to be honest, but it caused me to reflect of like, why am I this way? Now, a few reasons. I'm the oldest sister. I also think, I have three younger sisters. Naturally, I don't know. I just think there's something about that. I'm like, you know,
need a support
I'm like to keep them in line, you know.
Yes.
I'm naturally quite like, I'll stand up and do something first. All of those things, that's in my personality. And it's not that I thought I have to maintain that or keep up appearance. That's just always what I've done. I felt like, oh, I've been a helper and I'm actually comfortable with that too. So I think for me, and I want to ask you both this as well. So when you've both been going through difficult times recently and you've both kind of been the ones to keep up appearances, probably be the helper with your friendships and in your family, was it an uncomfortable time for you to get used to accepting harm? You know, maybe if people offered to you, oh, do you want me to do that for you, or just checking out? It sounds like we would just accept it, but I'm just not convinced that we always do. Like, did you just accept that? Did you have to go through a process where you started to feel comfortable with, right now I'm not the strong one, I'm not the helper, I'm being helped?
100%. I think when you are going through challenging situations, it's about trying to find who you can lean on for that level of support, who's accessible to you. And you don't want to feel any sort of rejection. And actually, it's okay. If somebody can't help you, it's okay. But you can take that so much more personally if you're in like a really vulnerable situation for yourself. So I think, again, this goes back to family, but I know that my family's, they have no choice. We've all they actually don't. But they are like my like backbone, I would say. And then again, I was like really fortunate, and I am really fortunate to have amazing friends that did like just show up. And honestly, like till today, I don't think any of them will know how indebted I feel to them for kind of like being a support system or a backbone for me in that time. But it is difficult being vulnerable because you never want to feel like a burden. And I also don't like feeling like a victim. You know? And it's like this kind of dynamic of like, don't feel sorry for me, but actually I need help.
It's actually quite complicated.
It really is. And then like, again, you think vulnerability is so easy, because I would say that I'm quite open, I'm quite transparent, like I feel like I can share quite easily. But then also you then think about if somebody else, how somebody else responds to that. So for example, if, you know, like with my dad passing away, I was mindful of who I spoke to with other people who have experienced that side of things. Because you don't know how it's going to trigger them or impact them. It's not something you get over, you know.
But weren't you sort of then managing your own sort of pain in order to accommodate still someone else? And do you think that was a good choice, or did you, like, did you think I'm doing the right thing? Or was it still then you didn't weren't able to fully express what you were going through because you're still mindful of another person.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I think that's a shock. I think it's just an example of innately being strong whilst needing to have support, you know? And I guess at the back of your mind, you're always just going to be thinking about the other person, you know? And I don't know if that's necessarily just being a strong trait. I think sometimes it's just a human being trait. Like, you know, if you have those kind of thoughts and feelings for others, you naturally just think, oh, I don't want to be a burden on someone else, you know?
I think being a Christian, I just carry this thing on my shoulder that it has to look good. Yeah. Like, you have to let other people know we're having a good time over here. So I've always had this, you know, thing, because people are like, Christians are this, they're fake. So I'm like, I'm real. I used to take that on myself, that I must show people my life is the reason why Jesus died. I'm having so much fun. So I remember at work, even not understanding things or maybe being upset and really trying to, like, suppress it, because they know Sinead's a Christian. Oh, isn't she? The jolly woman is angry today. Or, you know what I mean? So I think I always have this self-editing, and I think Christians do it, where we try to edit ourselves because we have to show love. Or, you have to forgive. Mm. You have to, you know, and I think we do it to us. It's a self-pressure, I think. So I don't know, Adjoa, if you've had that, where internally you're saying, no, because of my faith, I can't show that this has affected my faith, when really going through something like that can shake
your
faith. You've
seen really how much that had actually rocked you in your faith. Yeah, no, it definitely did. And I think it's a difficult one when you're speaking to other people who are Christians and pastors and that type of thing. It can be hard to kind of wanting to be honest about how you feel, but then you don't want to be judged in, you know, saying how you truly feel. Mm. And like the reality was, I felt really disappointed. I felt very like let down by God. And I did feel very much like when you go through something like that, it feels as though everywhere you look, someone's pregnant. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but something happens where you'll get on the bus and like the person will be pregnant. Yeah. Like, it just happens that way. And you will feel like, so why me? Yeah, and there are people out here who don't even know you or love you like I do. So Lord, why would you let this happen to me? But then that's not something that I think, or at least I felt, you can be honest about feeling that when you're speaking to certain people or like certain other Christians. Not my friends, but, you know.
Did you feel like you were in a safe space with friends to really...
I think with my friends,
be open
I did.
And honest about
that. With my friends and my family, like you said, like the day that happened, my mum booked a train and came down like the next morning. She was like, I'm coming to see you. And at first I was a bit like, this is very hasty. Like, I just kind of want some time by myself. But in the end, that was actually what I needed, and she knew that. I didn't know that, but she really knew that. So, yeah, my family was so supportive, and my friends, I think it was like two of my close friends that I told, and one of them, I wasn't necessarily intending to tell her, but I think I had to go and see her like a few days later or something, and then I ended up just breaking down crying and like telling her, and I'm so glad that I did. And I think I learned so much in that situation that people can't support you through what they don't know.
Absolutely.
So if you don't tell anyone anything, then you don't have anyone to lean on. And you can't feel like, oh, no one supported me, because no one knew what it was you were going through. So I think it is important to where you can and where you feel comfortable. And that's why it's important to have friends that you really trust and feel that you can rely on, that you can share those moments so that they can support you. Because anyone who loves you and is truly your friend wants to be there for you. But if they don't know, they can't do that.
I think sometimes historically, I mean, I'm not like this anymore, but I think when we think about strength and being the strong one, sometimes I feel like sometimes we wear that like a badge of honor.
Oh,
I'm strong. I can get through this. Like, I'm okay. And it's not, oh my gosh, nobody help me.
Yeah.
But then I do think the narrative has changed a little. Well, it's definitely changed for me, but I think also in the last few years of going, actually, when you are vulnerable in the right spaces, in safe spaces, that actually requires so much more strength. Like shutting your wall up and all of that, that's actually easier than when you begin to let it down and say, actually, I'm really struggling with my faith in this, or actually I feel really let down, or I'm disappointed, or I need help, or my mental health's really low.
Yeah.
We know, I feel like maybe we know now that vulnerability creates connection. Mm-hmm. It's our humanity, shared humanity. Yeah. But I feel like for so long, being strong was like a badge of honor. Yeah. Like, I don't really cry about anything. Like, I'm always the helper.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe that was just me, but I started to see that is such a lie.
Yeah. I cry a lot. I actually love crying.
Me too.
Could cry right now. Because it's just my way of releasing, anything that's going on that day. Again, I thought the tears are enough to show myself, okay, you've had your sorry moment, keep it moving. Mm. But what you're saying about vulnerability, I think, because it's trending now to kind of also be, oh, my therapist. And like,
yeah, that is so true.
But the realness of vulnerability is actually saying, why is this happening? Or looking at your weaknesses and saying, oh God, Lord, I'm really weak in this area. And that takes a lot of courage to really say, I'm weak in this and honesty. And it can take a long time. So when you're going through the trial, you might not know this is how you are acting. Mm. And I think I've looked back at myself and thought, oh my gosh, I'm a very emotional person. That I had to be, look back and say, not that it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. I had a breakup once and I literally was driving my car and like listening to breakup music and just driving and saying, and then I look back and I think, I've been through worse, you know? But I really just had to have the honest look that your emotions are an area you need to work on. Mm. And I'm glad that I've had these conversations with God, because then at different times in my life when, not necessarily I had to be strong, but I had to think clearly.
Yeah.
There was times where two people in my family were really unwell, and it wasn't the time, and I have to be careful I say this, but it wasn't time to cry.
Right.
It was time to pray.
Right.
You know, God, like, he sees your tears, but he can't respond to your tears. Mm. So it was time to pray. And I remember I heard the news on the phone and my dad was like, hey, it's time to pray. It's not time to. I was like, oh God. And I just thought, no, actually, hold the tear. Mm-hmm. It's time to pray. Because if God wants to come in. And so I've had to learn that. Are you going to cry, Sinead? Are you going to pray right now? Mm. And it doesn't mean I'm being strong. It means I'm doing what is needed for this trial. And I'm just thinking, have you looked back and thought, I could have altered this part of myself to show my weakness better? Or, have you had that reflective moment where instead of giving strength or telling people I'm fine, or maybe I could have changed my, the way I was approaching that, I'm just thinking, thinking about myself. But I don't know if you both have felt that way.
Yeah.
Looking back, yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's funny. So over the last couple of years, I'm quite like you. I would have classified myself, or actually I've been told I'm a very emotional person. And I've got a friend and he would always tell me so harshly, not even like, oh, men are naturally more logical than us women, right? So I'd be like, oh, you're so emotional. And I'd be like, well, okay. So he would always have a logical approach to things. Yeah. And it was really amazing to see, wow, actually, when you do take emotion from things, you can see things clearer.
Yeah.
And I think this is why scripture actually does speak about us kind of acting from a place of emotion. Mm. I know it kind of connotates a lot more to anger, but, anger is an emotion. And there are kind of a lot of things, like even lust and stuff, all of those emotions. The Bible talks so much about us not acting in those places. Mm. So when he would say it to me all the time, I used to think, okay, Diane, when I'm in a certain situation, I will take the emotion out of it and just move from a place of logic. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that has been one of the biggest changes in my life over the last couple of years, to the point where sometimes it can make you feel or seem insensitive, but actually you're just seeing it for what it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that that has probably been a big change and a big difference in now how I try and respond to things, or how I manage things. Sometimes taking that emotion out is necessary, like it's needed.
But then as a result, do people then label you, like, you're both mothers?
Yeah.
Do people say you're always keeping it together? Mm. Are you always having to keep it together because you've got children, you've got people looking to you? Are you always then having to keep it together all the time? Mm. You know?
I think what you were saying about feeling as though you have to kind of not ask for help and that sort of thing. I think definitely this motherhood space, like my oldest is three, so I'm still a newbie in the motherhood arena. But that is definitely something that I think is so prevalent within the whole motherhood capacity that I almost think, like what you were saying about the whole badge of honour thing, it is seen as like moms should be these martyrs who are just going to be like, everything is for the kids and I will just be in the corner like wasting away. And I honestly think that is something that almost is kind of celebrated in a way that it's as though you have to be seen to be... Everything has to be the kids. Okay. So unless you're showing that every single thing is the kids,
then you're not being a good enough mom.
That's interesting.
And I think, I think that makes it hard for women to ask for help when they are struggling because there's also this perception that everyone has to be the perfect mom. And obviously everyone's trying their best, but no one's perfect. But I think there is... Everyone does want to put on a slight perception of like, I'm the perfect mom. Yeah. So therefore I can't tell anyone I'm struggling or tell anyone that I need help. I just have to waste away and look after the kids. And I think that's something that I've seen a lot sort of like in my life with other friends and family and that type of thing. And I really have felt I don't want that to be my story. Like I still want to have things that I'm interested in. If I need help, I want to be able to ask for it. And thankfully I have a family and a husband who really support that. If I need help, all I have to do is say. But I did find it hard in that, especially that first year of motherhood, to kind of, I think it was about 4 months in, it was tough. Like, she didn't sleep. It was just, like, really, really tough. And that was the first time I had to sit down with my husband and I was like, I can't cope. This is, I'm really, really struggling. And that was really difficult to do because I think I did feel a little bit like, am I not cut out for this motherhood thing.
Yeah.
It makes you then start to question that. And it's because people don't talk about those times.
Yes.
And so you think, well, I'm the only one who 4 months in is thinking, I can't do this. You know, you really do think that, but it's only as more people open up about it, you're like, no, everyone feels that way. We all feel that way. But people don't always say.
And although you've both had really quite different stories in the last couple of years, you've obviously both really walked with grief for different periods. And grief obviously can be erratic, it's non-linear, all of those things. During kind of, you know, time moves on and after losing your baby and losing some of your family, I think people sometimes expect us to just reset, but, you know, they're back to normal, they've kind of moved on from the news, but that's not always how it is. Did you feel beyond that time the pressure to keep up any kind of appearances at that point? Like, okay, that's happened and now I'm moving on. Not that you said that, but did you ever feel the pressure to be like, oh, I should be feeling a bit more positive by now, or I shouldn't be having doubts anymore, or I should be a bit more together by now?
Yeah. I think, I don't know if I felt the pressure. I don't know if it was from other people or if it was from me.
From yourself.
But I definitely felt when I then got pregnant again and I felt quite anxious and a bit fearful during that pregnancy because of what had happened. I don't think I was as open with people about how I felt about that because I kind of felt like people would think, well, you're pregnant now, like, so you should be happy. So I don't think outside of my husband, I don't think other people really knew what I went through during that pregnancy in terms of, just feeling a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of worry throughout that pregnancy. That's something that I didn't really share with people because I guess I did. A part of me did feel like, well, you're pregnant now. Like, you prayed that you'd get pregnant again and you are. So, what else? Like, you can't now be complaining about something else. I think I probably did feel a little bit like that. And I didn't really open up to, outside of my husband, I don't really think I opened up to anyone else about that at the time.
I remember someone saying to me last year, don't be afraid to take up space. And I thought they were talking about, I don't know, my career.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to say more in work meetings. I'm going to be like, I don't disagree. But what you were saying about telling people again or it's, I think it was more about me as a person wanting to take up people's time or space. And sometimes at church, someone would say to me, how are you? I'm like, I'm fine. And then I'd see them ask another person and they would just tell them this essay. And I'd be like, well, I have a thing going on. I'm scared. I'm scared. But I was afraid to take up space. I think that was the thing. And I do think when you're looking after so many people, you're thinking my story is extra room that I'm going to take up. And it's something I tell myself, don't be afraid to say, oh, actually, on Monday, you know, this has happened. And that also, when people look at you, especially when you have you're married, you have kids, people are like, well, you've got what I want. Mm. So you're nervous to say, oh, the marriage is, you know, something is not as, it's not popping off the way you guys think. But the single friend will be saying, well, girl, you don't complain. Or you think that's what they're going to say.
Yeah.
And then the person without a child is like, well, you've got children.
Yeah.
Like, but I hate my kid. No, you know what I mean? I'm just saying, like, it's the comparison, the, like not jealousy, but you're just yourself telling yourself a message. And I think, I don't know if you guys have struggled to take up space and say, actually, I need help, or I'm going through. And yes, I have one child, but I'm trusting God for another child. And that's okay to say. But someone had to come and tell me that. Don't be afraid to take up space. And thank God somebody told me that, because it's something deep in me that I've struggled with throughout my life, to be honest.
Yeah. And again, I think it's because, we can answer the question, but I'm just thinking about what you're saying. It's because of that thing of, innately we feel we should be strong, or that's just you, and that's maybe just our natural bend, I think, because we just think, right, I'm not going to take up space because that's making me a burden. But if someone else said to us, like, oh, I feel like I'm going to be a burden, we'd be like, no, and we'd actually believe it as well.
Yeah,
but like to ourselves, like, I'm about to be a burden to this person, and we really think I really am. Because it's not, we're not used to sitting in that seat. I also think that's okay, by the way. It's not everybody's thing to like unpack the life story when they get asked who they are. Like, it's, are they okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. You know what I mean? It's not everybody's way, but anyway, what was the question? And
sorry. It's open though.
Because you were talking about time, essentially, kind of like after time has passed, is it still okay to feel how you feel? And honestly, like, my dad passed away in 2021, and then my best friend passed away a few months after that. Until today, I know time is a healer, but honestly, I still have moments of real deep grief. And it feels as though I shouldn't feel that way. Like, I even feel, it's been a couple of years now, why do you still feel that same way? Or, you know, almost 3 years. But you still feel that same way. And I feel as though it also makes you assess other situations that you may be in. Because, like, actually, yes, I've lost my dad, I've lost my best friend. They are actual situations that I will never get back. But then, you know, you kind of go through life and, you know, you lose friendships and you lose, like, there's other kind of areas of loss that people experience. And I think that sometimes you don't even realise how that could be triggering to, you know, think, oh, if you, you know, fall out of a friend, you think, oh, well, I've actually lost somebody where I can never speak to them again. It makes you think, oh, am I really going to lose this person now? Because I've experienced actual grief, you know, and losing someone else.
And because it's maybe something you, well, it's not something that ever any of us expect to go through at this age. And then, especially not, you know, a dad, a best friend. But then when it's, when the impossible has happened, is what I'm trying to say, then everything becomes a possibility. And it's like, what if that happens to them?
Exactly. And it's like the number one thing in life that's guaranteed as well. I always say that it's important, or if we all walked around with a clock that's counting down, we would be so much more intentional, would be like more mindful of how we are. And I feel like when you experience grief, that's the thing that you think about. You think, oh my gosh, like, this is eventually going to happen to me one day, or people that I love. How am I going to live life intentionally, but also without all the pressures of
balance.
Yeah,
I think, again, with being a believer, you're always thinking, I've got to live for God. I've got to live out my purpose. And then I want to cry all day. So how is that going to take away from the people of God? I think especially in leadership, where you go into church and everyone has their church face. I have like a game face, like church is work as well for me. So, you know, deep down, someone, and people tell me the truth to my face. They're like, oh, you look so tired today. And I'm thinking, right, well, okay.
Thanks
for being honest. But I still have to have the game face. And church is supposed to be a hospital. It's supposed to be a place where we bring our brokenness, you know, hear the like, listen to the word that can help us build it back. But it sometimes becomes a place of we must look together because we're the people of God and God is victorious and he's, you know, on he's number one. And, you know, so it's hard to get the balance between actually this is a place where you can have let go and really give your pressures and your burdens over. But it takes a lot to do that. I think it's a discipline you actually have to build on. I don't know if you've disciplined yourselves, both of you, to be able to let things go so you can move forward. Because the amount of loss, you know, an average person would just stay in that space for a long time. So what are the practices that you've had to do to unburden yourself of those heavy weights?
I think I'm still in the process of doing that, to be honest with you. I've always struggled to let things go. I don't like losing things, like as in even things. If I lose my keys, I'm annoyed. I'm like, why has that happened? And so I'm still in the process of what that looks like. And I think we don't talk about the things in the process. Okay. You know, like I wish I had an answer for that. You know, but I, the reality is I don't. And I think all I can do is continue on the trajectory that I'm on in seeking God and praying and, you know, like really going deep in that way, because that's all I also know. But also, you know, I guess maybe trying to be this vulnerable person that I would say that I am, but actually in its entirety, I don't know. I do think I hold things back as well, you know. So, I'm still in the process.
I would say the same. I think one of the things that I really struggled with is I constantly had this question of why. And I think it got to a point where I was like, you have to let that go. I'm not, like, I still don't feel I have the answer for that. But I had to get to a point where I was just like, God, I'm trusting you that you have the answers and you have something for me. You see the end from the beginning in a way that I can't. And I just had to let that go. I think that was the biggest thing, because I wasn't going to have this answer that, you know, I can now say to you, well, actually it was, you know, I don't have that, but I had to be able to move forward from that.
What do you think about pride in the middle of strength, right? So just give me a minute to explain. I think sometimes when we don't ask for help, or we wear strength like a badge of honour, or always the helper or the strong one, I'm not going to lie, I'm not saying it's always like this. Sometimes it's just a learned behaviour. But when I've reflected on myself in the past, I thought, oh, I'm a bit proud. I actually don't think I need the help. And it's taken life to teach me, oh, yes, you do. You actually, you know, you're not just like, you're just like everybody else, but you're a human being. And as much as, like, you know, I am the personality that I am, I'm not suddenly going to change overnight. And all of that's okay. And I'm not despising that. I'm not thinking, oh, I need to become so weak and needy. But I think there can be a bit of pride in there sometimes when we're trying to be strong and we're trying to keep everything together. And, you know, even the example you gave, Adra, of like, certainly as a mom of a very young baby, it's like you should be just sacrificing everything so that they can have everything. There can be pride, or, you know, because you don't want to say, people don't actually want to say, actually, I had regrets about this, or, oh, this is really tough.
What do you think? Sometimes the pride isn't even just being proud and thinking that you don't need the help. I think, or at least for me, sometimes it's just not wanting other people to know that you need the help. So it's like, I know I need the help, but I don't want other people to see me in a certain way. And I think that can be a little bit prideful of like, I just want to give off this impression that I'm perfect and that I've got it all together. And I don't want anyone to question that. And I think that can be, that can be where the pride comes from as well.
Most definitely.
I completely agree. As you're both speaking, I'm thinking of when you're taking like an Instagram picture and you say that, like, my table is dirty on that side. And you sort of turn the camera, do you know what I mean? Just take that picture like of this part of my table because it's so clean. And that is literally like, oh, look how well this... And meanwhile, there's dishes, there's like all this stuff on the other side. And, like, we live in that culture where there's still the images flawless, and it's even more flawless than it's ever been before. So even people sharing their story, it's an edited version of the story. And it's journaling is so important, because you sometimes just have to say to God, this is terrible. Like, mm-hmm. this is awful. And I'm so grateful that I have a relationship with God because yeah. I can tell him, I really, really dislike this person, like strongly, mm. or I'm not perfect. Like mm. I think dark, awful things like at times. And sometimes it scares me mm. to tell him that. But it's a pride thing. It's like, mm. oh, I could never feel jealousy.
Yeah.
Oh, I can. Oh no, I don't need what you need. It's like, mm. God, I really want that. So yeah. I really think pride is something that is. So, it's like a dirty word in yeah. in the faith that oh, yeah. I'm not too proud. But I think it's hard. It's hard to identify. There's an ugliness to mm. us that mm. we all have, mm. and we all have to bring light in mm. onto you know those things. So. Yeah, it's just, I'm just thinking about that editing
yeah.
that
yeah.
we do, mm. you know. Yeah.
It's true. If you really actually want to know how you feel mm. and what your mind's saying, there's an exercise. It's basically just writing down. You can't lift your pen from the paper and you just write for like 20 minutes. Even if you don't know what you're going to say or don't know what you want to say, just say that, but just write, and read it back. Mm. And that is like your thoughts just on paper, mm. you know? And I think from doing things like that, you know how it is yes. that you're feeling, mm. like your heart is feeling,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. As part of the conversation today, we've started doing something called Audience Dilemmas. Mm-hmm. And it's where Magnify community sending questions just about the different topics that we're mm-hmm. going to be speaking about. And we've got some today. So we'll read yes. them. Yes. It would be great to get your input into them as well, sure. if that's okay. Yeah, so it'll be around this topic. So, right. Should I do the first one,
yes,
Sinead?
Please.
Right. Okay. Hang on. It's loaded. I have a friend that had a pretty serious breakdown, has been struggling with her mental health. It did come across as a bit of a shock since on the surface, she's always seemed like the most outgoing, life-loving, entertaining and extroverted friend that I have. That being said, I can now see a lot of the need to always go out most likely comes from a place of escapism. A lot of this was triggered by her breakup that she was quite dependent on for stability. I guess that means the relationship. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to her on multiple occasions, letting her know that I'm here for her and have attempted to spend time with her in a more intimate and wholesome environment, like taking her for a coffee or going for a walk, but she doesn't always respond. She always says she's fine and unbothered, but I've known her for years and can tell that she's just trying to put on a brave face to push me away. I really want to see her heal, but she's not necessarily surrounding herself in a healthy environment to facilitate that. If I've done everything in my power and she's not responding, is there anything I can do practically to create a safe space for her to open up in besides praying for her and letting her know that I'll always be here if she wants to talk?
Wow.
So is there anything else in addition to those two things that they could do?
That's a good friend.
You know what? That's mm-hmm. an amazing friend.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not about speaking to people that you know. It's about speaking to complete strangers that have no idea about your life.
Mm.
So maybe an additional thing that I would suggest is if she gifts her like vouchers for a therapist or therapy wow, or really something.
Good.
Yeah, because I think, you know, we're so used to sharing with people, but there's power in sharing with people that don't know you, don't know yes. your background.
Yeah.
You can offload and walk away and have no judgment because, you know, there's no attachment in that way. So that might be something.
Yeah. I think you can't give up as well in love. Like, you've got to, if you're relentlessly loving someone as well, I think it's all well and good saying, I want to be there for you, girl, and then like go away and you're like, well, actually, I have things to do anyway.
Sure.
So I think sometimes I'm doing something with someone. Like, I think, you know, sometimes you see people asking for money, then you'll buy them something. They'll go, oh, I don't want that. I want that. And I'm thinking, you're going to take what I give you. Yeah, so it's me just literally thinking, wait, are you doing this to look good? Or are you doing this to serve someone?
Yeah.
And I think it's just that, am I coming as a servant? Like, am I coming to serve you? Or serve myself.
It's almost like you think
as a friend.
Know
she's tried different methods and she doesn't know the best. I think a nice one would be like writing her a letter, just say, I'm here for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But definitely you don't know what people need. Only God does. And I think sometimes prayer, people just say, I'll pray for you.
Oh my gosh.
That's a whole conversation, but if you pray for someone, like you pray for yourself and you trust that God knows this person and you're sincerely praying for them, they will come out. Yeah. They will come through. But it's, are we sincerely praying, sincerely hoping they come through, or hoping to be their savior and say, oh, when you were going through that hard time, I was there for you? Are we really trying to serve these people? And I think she has to just serve her the best way she can and be okay with her friend not being okay, you know?
These things take time. Like, I honestly, overall, think prayer is the best gift. It truly is, because God moves. God will move through prayer. And so if that friend continues, and as you said, like, it shows up in love all the time, I think, like, she will see a change eventually.
And I think just keep it as an open space. Like, don't keep putting pressure on her. Like, talk to me. How do you feel? Yeah. Like, especially if you say that she was, you know, the most outgoing person, most upbeat person, she probably doesn't feel that comfortable being vulnerable all the time. And then I almost think it makes it worse when it's like someone's putting you on the spot to, like, come on, cry.
Do you know what I mean?
So it's just like, just be there for her. And even just her knowing that she has you there to go to if she wants to is amazing and is great for you as a friend to give her. But you have to also accept not everyone processes things in the same way. And sometimes sometimes you can be trying to get a response out of someone that is how you would respond to something or how you would deal with something, but not everyone processes things in the same way. And I think the therapy thing that you said as well is a great piece of advice.
I want them to know that they can rely on me, but I can't help but feel like all the other mums in church on Facebook and Instagram are doing a terrific job. I'm proud of them because it's hard work, but it makes me feel like I'm a bit of a failure. I know parenthood isn't easy for anyone, but I have waves of feeling really inadequate. I don't have time to pour into myself like I did pre-pregnancy. I can feel myself heading towards breaking point. I also think I feel the pressure from myself and other Christians to be the perfect example of a biblical, soft and put together mother. And this is hard to do while I also balance my career. Everyone that I've confided in is telling me that I need to take some time out for myself, but I don't live close to my family. I also don't trust leaving my kids with most people for long periods of time. How do I find the balance between looking after myself and my kids and making sure that I can still have the space to check in on myself?
There's a lot in that one. I feel like there's loads in that one. I think number one, everyone that you think has it all together, no one has it all together. Like, absolutely no one has it all together. And I think as far as Instagram goes, social media goes, we have the power to curate who we see. So if there are people on Instagram who you feel make you feel inadequate or just trigger like a negative feeling within you, just unfollow them. Just mute them. And it doesn't mean they're a bad person. They could be amazing, but for some reason there's something about them or the content that they put out that makes you feel a certain way that's not good. So just remove them. And there are definitely people that I've done that with or just thought, every time you pop up, it makes me think, oh, I should have made my daughter like some amazing homemade meal. No, let me unfollow you. I think sometimes that just has to be done. And then the thing about taking time for yourself, I think it is so, so important because you can lose sight of yourself in motherhood. You really can, especially when they're young. I think that can be really difficult. So really try to find someone that you can trust to leave your kids with, even if it's just for an afternoon. I'm the same that my parents and my husband's parents don't live in London. So sometimes, like, they'll come down to spend a weekend with us. That weekend, we're out every day. I'm leaving those kids at home. So it's just find someone who you feel that you can trust, even if it's just for a few hours, to go out for an afternoon, whether it's with your husband, whether it's by yourself. It's even better when it's by yourself. And go and have a meal uninterrupted, like, anything, whatever it is that fills your cup. But I think that is really important. And then last one, sorry, outside of that, if you can't get anyone, just try and find pockets of time that you can take a little bit of time for yourself. So even when I put my son down for a nap, sometimes if I'm just really stressed, I'm going to go put a face mask on. Yeah. And I've got 10 minutes to do a face mask. And that's all the self-care I've got time for today. But at least it's something that just makes me feel like I've taken a little bit of time for myself. Because you can't always have a weekend away or, you know, some of the things that you see people do. But if you can just find something that brings you some enjoyment, even watching Real Housewives, that brings me joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you
much
know?
Joy. So much,
it just brings me joy. Whatever it is that just makes you feel a little bit more like you and less like mum, I think that can be great.
I mean, all those points you said are so true. Like, before you were a mum, you were you. And I think it's really important to remind yourself of that and not feel guilty when you kind of understand that, yes, a mum is part of your title, but also so are you. And I think it's really important to find pockets of time to do that, be it waking up earlier, which I know can be harder, or going to bed that little bit later, but finding time for you. Instagram, social media, it's not a real place. Like, it's really not. We can curate all what we want people to see. And actually, more time than none, it is people's showreels. It's like their high life showreel. And that's okay. But what that means is it's not sustainable. It's not real life. It's not realistic. And people do need to take time from it, because it does directly and indirectly impact our mindsets, who we are, how we think of things. And comparison is the thief of all joy. When we compare things, even though it's a common thing that we do, it steals your joy and it makes you feel less than, even when you're doing amazing. We didn't all start from the same start race. Like, you know, somebody's baby that's, you know, maybe an amazing child, is in a really good routine or what have you, may not be another child who may be a bit more needy, or who may have colic, or, you know, like, we don't all start from the same place. So when we think about all of those other added variables of what we think we're looking at, it just kind of takes you away from your own reality. So I think it's really important about, like, really carving out that time to be reminded that you were a person before you were a mother. It's okay to have those low moments and to be like, I'm tired and I need a break. But I think that the main issue is finding somebody that she trusts to have her children. Because I get it, like, as a mom, you don't want to just leave your children with anybody. So
before you do the third one, I want to add something. You know, we talked, they spoke about Facebook and Instagram and things, but I also think in real life, if you if you're spending time with perhaps other moms that you are very I don't know how to say this in a diplomatic way, and I'm not very diplomatic, but are so, just as you described before, like, everything's self-sacrifice, everything's for the kids, and please, like, hear my heart in this. I have two children, I adore them, and, like, they they're my world, really. But I'm still a human being. And it's like you say, mom is one part of your title. When I spend too much time with other parents like that, I feel like, oh, I feel bad about myself. Now I'm going to limit that time. And I would actually say that in the same way, not like 100%. Unfollow, like, I'm not going to see them anymore. I'm not saying that, but if that's not good for you at the minute, because you're not handling that well yourself, you're struggling yourself a bit with how you feel, it's good to limit the time you have with people who make maybe don't make you feel like that, but who elicit that response in you. And that's just a way of protecting yourself, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Because at the end of the day, everyone's different. Everyone parents differently. But no one likes to feel like they're being judged or, you know, looked at a certain way. And I remember certain people who, like, I went away last year to go visit, both my sisters live in the States, went for a week away. It was, like, the best week ever. And obviously left my daughter, and I was pregnant at the time, actually. I left my daughter with my husband and my mum came to help. And so many people were like, you could leave her for a whole week by yourself. But how the only people who said that were mums. And it was like... And it was and it was almost like people wanted me to feel bad about it. And I was like, no, I don't feel bad. Because for the past 2.5 years, I haven't gone anywhere or done anything. And this is 1 week out of her whole life that I'm not there. And she's with two people who love her, who I trust. So there's no reason why I should feel bad about it. But I did find it interesting that it was only other mums who would say, but how can you leave her? How can you? I was like, I'm fine.
To experience that level of guilt from other people that probably wished they could do that is also wild, because I guess they would never say that if your husband jetted off.
No.
For how long.
No.
But, you know, your children were with the other parent.
Yeah, exactly.
Respect. So like, yeah. If he can't survive, oh well.
Yeah.
If your kids don't survive, oh well.
I'm just thinking, like, your priorities as a mom, is it children, God, everyone? Like, where is the order? Because I'm just thinking, because everyone, other mothers are telling you, you should go underneath all these people. And I think, is that something that we need to, I'm thinking, should we change that? Because the strong spirit of a man sustains him. So if I'm not strong, I can't even be the person you want me to be. So I think where you see yourself in that list is really important, especially when you become a mum. I think maybe it jumps to the top and we need to think about where we see ourselves. Just, yeah, just was thinking, as you're saying that,
I do think that is really challenging, because I hear people talk about it a lot. Like, I hear a lot of people kind of going on the other side of it, where we're in this self-care world now, that it's like, I'm going to put myself first. Okay. And I struggle with that because I don't think I have the answer as to what I think is the right thing, but something doesn't sit right with me to say, oh, I put myself first, because I think, you know, God calls us to serve others. So I think to say, oh, I put myself like before my husband, before my kids, doesn't feel right.
No.
It doesn't feel right
to me.
I don't
think it's realistic.
No, it's not realistic anyway, but it definitely doesn't feel right to me. So I do feel like my husband and child have to come before me, but I have to make sure that there's time and space for me. Yeah. That doesn't mean that I'm saying, oh, I'm not bothered about myself, but I just have to create that space and time.
Yeah. So we've got another dilemma from the audience. It says, I've always been known as the one who always has everything together. I was always brought up to be there for others, and my faith has taught me the same thing. Because of this, throughout my life, and especially adulthood, I'm usually the person that everyone comes to when they have a problem or facing something challenging. I think I've become too comfortable with being the helper, and recently I've been struggling. I lost my sister last year. She was my best friend and was the one person, oh my gosh, I'm going to cry, I felt really understood me and always knew the right thing to say. I don't think the effect of that really hit me until the past couple of months, when I've just been finding everything stressful and exhausting. I'm usually someone who can deal with my emotions and anxieties well to be able to find solutions to get up and go, but I'm struggling to do that at the moment. I've been praying to God about it, but I feel I'm not hearing anything back. When I've opened up about how I felt in the past to certain friends and family, I've been met with a lot of toxic positivity, like everything happens for a reason, and have you tried praying? Because of this, I feel very apprehensive to do this again, but I know I need to. Have you got any tips or advice for facing toxic positivity when you just need to be heard?
Wow.
Oof. Ladies,
wow, that is deep.
Yeah,
because I do think that is like the rebuttal to be like, have you prayed? I'll pray about it, like, I'll pray for you. And when you don't want to hear that, it's like, it's hard.
I think if they're asking to be heard, then they need to find a space to be heard. It may not be with immediate family.
Yeah.
Like you said, it might be with a therapist. And that's okay to say it can't be you guys right now. It has to be with someone else.
Yeah. I think communicating that as well in a safe space, like actually right now, I would really appreciate you just letting me be me. And I think it takes courage to say that. And it takes somebody who you think is going to listen to. But not, I think a lot of people are fixers. They always want a solution and want to make things better straight away. I'm a recovered fixer. I was such a fixer. And then I realised, actually, there's most things that I can't fix. So learning the skill of listening and just letting people be. But I think not everybody knows that. And they feel awkward, so they feel they have to say something. Being okay with silence, being okay with maybe even saying the wrong thing, but not trying to find a solution. And it's a skill, but I think sometimes you have to communicate, right now what I need is just somebody to let me just rant for an hour.
I
was gonna say the same thing, that sometimes you have to tell people, I just need to tell you how I feel, and I don't actually need your advice, and I don't need you to give me the answers. I just need to be heard, and I hope that you find someone who can give you that, because yeah, sometimes people just want to jump in and be like, well, have you tried this? Have you done this? This will make it better. But it can be a bit invalidating. Like you almost just want someone to listen and say, like, I understand why you feel the way that you feel, and that's okay.
Or just that that must be, I don't understand, but I can see that this is really hurting you, or you're in a lot of pain, and I'm sorry. Like, I'm so sorry that you're feeling that. It's tempting to be like,
to give more. I mean, I heard a sermon once, which is the best sermon I've ever heard, and it was about the blessing of not knowing. And I think believers hate that, not knowing what to say or what not to do, but it's helping me accept it's okay not to know. Not everything you can handle, not everything you must know, but rather if she's just needing to speak, that's okay. But you don't have to know why all the time, you know, and it's a blessing sometimes, you know, to have that. And I think God gives us that, just he knows what we can deal with, and we can come to him and express ourselves to him. He doesn't even speak at us all the time, you know, so I think it's okay not to know.
Ladies, this has been such a helpful conversation. But before we wrap it up, the Magnify community, obviously we'd love to know how we can support other women in our community. Is there any work you're doing at the minute, any projects you're working on, or just where we can find you online so that we can keep up with you?
Yeah, sure. So I, as I said, run an online business. It's called the Afro Beauty Company. So I would love everyone to like follow or support in whatever way they feel best. And if you want to find me, I am Being Diane on Instagram.
Amazing.
I'm on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. If you search Mothering and Style, you'll find me. And yeah, I do fashion content, beauty, bit of hair when I feel like it. And yeah, you can connect with me on those platforms. And I also do personal styling services. So just send me a DM and
Incredible. Ladies, thank you so much for your time and your vulnerability in this conversation as well.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Magnify Conversations. We hope you've enjoyed it and found it really value adding. If you're new to our community, or perhaps you just joined us for the first time today, we have an Instagram. Our handle is at Magnify Collective. You'll be able to find everything you need there to keep up to date with us. Next up, if you have a story that you would like to share on the Magnify Conversations, you can go on our website, magnificollective.com, and share your story with us. We really look forward to seeing you for next week's episode on Monday.